You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, you'll get a chance to tell us what you think of removing Confederate monuments and markers after the city of Madison announced the removal of a Confederate memorial marker in a local cemetery.
Now, okay, Rob, I need you to give me a nice, lovely, big smile.
Okay, I'm going to get up to the mic so people can see it out there. This is why it's hard to get a good picture of me. I do better with candid shots.
And that was a lovely smile.
It was a lovely smile.
I have no idea what it meant, but hopefully our next guest does and can tell us a little more about it. She says smiles can express a lot of things, ranging from approval to nervousness, even to misery.
Joining us now is Paula Niedenthal, professor of psychology at UW-Madison. She was involved in a study that looked at what emotions smiles can express. Paula, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Well, reading up on your study, as I understand it, usually people just focused in the past on whether a smile was real and sincere or fake. My example of a smile was, fake. I do very poorly at faking sincere smiles. But you're looking at more than that. What are you trying to figure out about smiles?
Well, first of all, you did pretty well. And we can, the nice thing for radio is you can tell when people are smiling because it changes the sound of your voice. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. We were looking beyond the idea of true smiles indicate that somebody's feeling really happy inside versus anything else is a false smile. And we asked ourselves, basically, if smiles accomplish different things other than just telling somebody that you're feeling good, what could those things be? So the way we look at it is we ask, facial expressions solve a lot of interpersonal problems, ones that help us survive in group living and interacting with other people, and sometimes even more people who don't speak our language. And so we propose that different smiles may accomplish three absolutely fundamental tasks for human living. One is rewarding other people's behavior, making them do stuff again. One would be showing that there is no conflict between us, that I'm not threatening, that I'm open to making a social bond with you, which we call an affiliative smile, the former a reward smile. And another thing we can do with smiles is, in a safe way, that is a non-immediately aggressive way, signal that we're better than somebody else or negotiate status with somebody.
We'll dig deeper into what those mean and what those mm-hmm. smiles look like
sure.
in just a bit. But as I understand it, I don't know if this is true, actually, this is really important to Americans because we smile a lot compared to a lot of other countries. Is this true?
Yeah, the norm in the United States, but in many other countries that have some interesting commonalities with the United States, is to express smiles often. And there are a lot of data showing that, but also expressing smiles in many more situations, including ones that might involve service and that involve strangers. So we smile more. The fact that there might be three types of smiles doesn't deny the fact that people in other countries also have those kinds of smiles. They may not have them in this exactly the same situations because the problem may not be the same, and they may do it less frequently, particularly with strangers.
Okay, let's dig into these three different
okay.
kinds of smiles. The reward smile, I'm rewarding you for being nice to me, I guess, or I'm hoping to motivate you to be nice to me by smiling.
That's one thing. I might make you or want you to repeat almost any behavior that you've just done. For example, we use reward smiles a lot with pre-verbal infants mm-hmm. to get them to approach or to do something again. So it's not just that I'm doing something friendly or you're doing something friendly and I'm giving you a reward smile. You might have done anything. You might have given me a cigarette. I don't want one. But you might have engaged in some sort of other behavior that I really approve of. Give me a gift, for example.
Now, where is this happening? Because I don't think most people are rashly thinking, I would like this person to repeat that pleasant behavior. I will now deploy my reward smile.
They're not. I mean, there's certainly a learning component. That is that we feel good when other people make those smiles. So they do work. And what we learn when we make a certain kind of smile, even automatically, is somebody will be more likely to repeat the behavior. They also might mimic it, make it back to us, and we can feel how good that smile feels. So the nice thing about a smile of reward is, first of all of the smiles I'm talking about are spontaneous, non-deliberative smiles. So we would call them all real. But it's the minute you do something that I like, I'm going to do that reward smile back to you, and you're going to get very quick, positive, good feelings from having done that behavior. So that's why it'll work.
In your research, you get into a lot what these smiles look like, mm-hmm. with people actually evaluating smiling faces. Talk about how you tried to measure this.
Yeah, it's sort of hard because, as you kind of implied, people are not very deliberate about this. And yet now you guys are, and maybe people listening, are going to go outside and notice that they see what I'm going to call as an affiliative smile all the time. Because affiliative smiles are what we do on the street or at the elevator or when we're acknowledging each other without necessarily feeling good, just being acknowledging. What we did to figure out what the smiles look like, and we've done different kinds of studies, but the one you brought me into the studio for went like this. With some colleagues at the University of Glasgow in Scotland, we created very carefully and very, very complicatedly animations of people smiling. So these are animations, right? Mm. They're not actual smiles, in which there was always what we call the smile muscle or the zygomaticus muscle, major muscle, which means the things, the muscles on either side of our mouth that raises our lips to make the mouth look like it's smiling. So we put that into our animations, and either both sides of the lips went up or one. So either that's bilateral or unilateral, right?
Okay. That was present. I'm demonstrating for people at home.
Looks really good.
Okay.
You got a lot of control over your facial muscles. So that occurred in all of our cartoons or our animated faces. And then very systematically, we added other facial actions or other muscles that could be contracting during a smile. Some of you have heard in the past about the smile around the eye, which causes crow's feet. That could have been present in our animations. So after creating in a very systematic way to over 2,000 animations, we had subjects look at those animations and judge the extent to which no smile was present or evidence of these three meanings or signals, that is affiliation, dominance, and reward, after defining what we meant by that. And what we could do then was to create a sort of visual prototype of what each of the smiles looked like, and we could find out the extent to which each thing that happens in the face predicts the judgments of reward, dominance, and affiliation. So we could kind of figure out what they think they look like.
When you show these to different people, does everybody tend to agree, oh yeah, that one's the reward smile, that one's the dominant smile? People are pretty consistent on that?
Well, what we could do is, after we had done the initial research where we really found out which facial actions lead people to make those judgments, is we could bring actors and actresses into our lab, which we did. We could teach them what we meant, and then they could realize that they knew what that was. And then we could actually make movies or films of real people making these smiles. And then we could show those to many, 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 many subjects and ask them very, very many questions, like, is this a smile at all? And that's the way that we could validate or find out whether or not people kind of agree, and they do agree. That was your question.
We're talking about the science behind smiles with Paula Niedenthal, professor of psychology at UW-Madison. We've touched on the reward smile. You mentioned the affiliative smile, like, hey, we're both pleasant people. We're not going to kill each other.
Right.
Yay. Let's get into the third one, the dominant smile. That sounds like a less pleasant smile to me.
Yeah, it's not motivated by positive emotions, and yet it's a real smile. It's the dominant smile has an interesting characteristic, which is quite asymmetrical, meaning only one. Oh, you did a good job of that.
It looks a little like a sneer.
It looks a little bit like a sneer, but it is a smile in the sense that there's a lot of zygomaticus contraction. So, and when people see it, they call it a smile. You say, if you can say, is that a smile or not? People say it's a smile. So we have data showing that. But it has components of contempt in it. So that means that there's a little bit of your nose wrinkling, as in disgust or contempt, and it is not coming from a positive place. It's coming from a place of derision.
None of these three smiles sound like they come necessarily from happiness. They're not smiling to reflect that inner happiness. Like you were talking about the old way of defining a genuine or false smile.
The reward smile comes closest to that because it comes out of a place of really positive emotion. I mean, happiness is too big and too large a state, but oh, I liked that you did that. It made me feel good. Now I'm making this facial expression to reward you. That's the closest to what people would call the real smile, because people start with the presumption that smiles occur when people are happy. And so that's why they call that reward smile the real smile. Then they walk around after they're in my class or in my lab.
Or talking to you on the radio.
Then you walk around and you go, oh, no, people are smiling in many, many situations. And very few of them, would I say, or not all of them, at least, are the ones in which people are actually feeling, joyous.
So what do we start to do with this now that we've classified these and figured out what's going on in our facial muscles from our mouths to our eyes that make these smiles? What's the next step in researching what this all means?
Yeah, what? Who cares is the real question. And I think everybody should always ask that. Smiles are just like totally important in almost all kinds of exchanges, including in politics and international relations and in business. And people throw a lot of money at smiles these days, I would say even in the last decade. So the Chinese often teach employees who will be working in North America or in international business to smile. They do that often by having people put pencils in their mouth to force contraction of the particular smile muscle.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's going to work, though, right? Mm-hmm. Because it sounds like it could be false altogether. So Paris had a smile campaign in 2009 to try to woo more tourists who complained that there wasn't enough smiling. People who are plastic surgeons reanimate and reconstruct the smile. So a lot of money and time is spent on smiling without a lot of knowledge. And so basically what you want to do is figure out what smile is it actually that you're trying to put back on the face or put on the face of a politician.
I wanted to ask about that. Like for people who've gone through plastic surgery or reconstruction, constructive surgery, I understand that if the smile doesn't come back right, it's really alienating for that person.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern. The plastic surgeon would ask, and I've certainly spoken at grand rounds at UW Hospital, School of Medicine and Public Health. One question that a plastic surgeon would say is, if I can do one thing, what should I do? You know, if one facial expression could be better animated. And so you can ask yourself, and one would ask yourself, what's the frequency of these expressions and what goes into them? And how should we improve this person's ability to make a facial expression? The other problem is that when there's facial paralysis, you don't do such a good job of knowing what other people's smiles mean, because one of the most important things about smiling is we know what the other person means by mimicking their smile. And if you don't have the opportunity to mimic smiles back, you're not sending the signal either that you understood and in fact, you probably didn't understand. So there's a lot that people who reanimate the face worry about when it comes to which smiles there are and what they really mean.
I want to ask about maybe an occupational hazard where you're talking about it. I can't stop smiling.
Oh. Like,
stop. Be serious, Rob. Stop. Is this, once you start thinking about it, is it really hard not to smile?
I wouldn't call it a hazard then, because it's pretty nice.
I guess it's a good thing to smile, sure.
I like a smiley lab. It's not a quote-unquote hazard to smile more. It's in general pretty interesting and nuanced. I do notice that I'm paying attention to all the smiles, and so are my students, and so are the people, all the millions of undergraduates who work on this research in my lab. They become really sensitized to it, but they see it as a positive thing.
And then you brought in actors to do this, and we started talking about the old way of thinking, the fake smile versus real smile. Is it really possible to replicate these three different kinds of smiles on purpose for a good actor?
It's pretty hard. I mean, most of our actors and actresses, our professionals, could do it, but we really had to explain to them, think about being in that situation. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I guess when I'm just crossing somebody at the elevator, I really do this thing, and they would do the affiliative smile, which actually is quite often closed mouth smile with lips kind of tightly pressed against the tightly pressed against the teeth. And then you say, yeah, that's it. But people have to get in their heads to kind of reenact that. I think in general, we go around making these smiles spontaneously. Getting the actors to do it was, yeah, more work.
Paula, thanks a lot for joining us. Very interesting.
Thank you so much for your interest in my research.
That was Paula Niedenthal, professor of psychology at UW-Madison and co-author of a new study, many studies before that one too, for that matter, on the science of smiles.
Coming up, we'll look at ongoing controversy over the removal of Confederate monuments after Madison Mayor Paul Soglin announced the removal of a Confederate plaque in Madison. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.